Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Sports Today.
Yeah, a little bit more energy today on this Sunday. No more royal wedding to talk about today. Just getting going with sports for the next 3 hours. So, for those of you that are perhaps surprised to hear my voice and Kevin's voice, we mentioned it yesterday. Fantasy Sports Today moves to both days on the weekend. So we've been doing Saturdays for the majority of this year from 9 to 12, and now we'll move to Sundays. So thanks for joining us. I know you listen to Roto Experts in the Morning in the past and some other programming, but I'll get you updated on the shows that are after us a little bit later this hour. But you're going to have us here for the next three. So I'm Mike Blewett, bringing in Kevin Walsh here in a minute. And I'm sure you listen to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio app or iHeartRadio or TuneIn or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. So thank you for joining us. We're going to have fun here and bring you as much possible fantasy news, sports news, fun, entertainment as possible. So thanks for having us in your home, in your car, on your phone, wherever it might be. So, Kev, good to hear from you this morning. We are going to talk some hoops, right?
Absolutely. Last night, it's funny, I guess perhaps because of what the result of the game was, but a lot of people were like, man, these conference finals have been terrible so far. But I'm like, I love this. I watched the whole game till finish.
Yeah. I think we both said we liked the Cavs last night, laying the 6.5. I thought I wasn't in love with laying that many points, but clearly it didn't matter last night. I think, too, you have to remember, whenever LeBron hasn't been down 2-0 in an Eastern Conference final in 10 years. He has been 2-0 down 2-0 in other series, and his record being down 2-0 is spectacular. He's always going to win the game three. And I think part of you have to be mindful of it. I'm annoyed at myself that I didn't bring it up yesterday, is that while we as fans were like, hey, let's get on with the show, LeBron was probably licking his chops being like, this is exactly what I need. I'm literally doing everything for this team. The one thing I do need is rest. Mm. In fact, this is the one, I'm not saying he's never intimated he was tired before or looked tired, but this is the one playoffs that he's very much vocalized it. Mm-hmm. When he talked during the Pacers series, particularly after game 7, how he was exhausted. He mentioned it even in the Toronto series, despite the fact that Toronto forgot to show up. He mentioned it that he was tired at times. And I do think coming off of 42, 10, and 12, even though that they lost by a significant margin, I think it is clear that he needed the rest. Plus, he took a shot in the jaw, and I'm sure that didn't feel all that great. So, 100% comes back well-rested. It helps, obviously, that his teammates chipped in finally. George Hill came out hot, 10 points in the first quarter, 20-4 run to start the game.
Yeah, it was really easy to see. Just they were engaged. I think that's probably the most frustrating thing about the Cavs is that first quarter lead. I think I had tweeted out when they were up 16, they ended the quarter up 15, where it's, I mean, obviously, yes, like they have talented players, but the entire reason for them to have that lead, it was effort-based. It was defensive, rotating on the defensive side of the basketball, actually setting good screens, moving off the ball into shooting pockets and creating space for whoever it is that was on the ball. It's effort-based, and I think one of the best stats that came out of this game was the Cavs contested, I believe it was 76% of the shots put up by the Boston Celtics in this game. From games 1 and 2 combined, I think they only contested, I believe it was 58% of the shots put up by the Celtics. So, I mean, almost half the looks Boston got were uncontested. Here, over 75%, they were contested. So that is one of the most frustrating things about this Cleveland team, and it's kind of been that way for a while. You alluded to it, and I guess perhaps I turned a blind eye because of the Raptors, but you were spot on where this team does have their slip-ups, and they allow themselves to just be in vulnerable positions, but they came out locked in, super engaged, and you saw it was a massive difference.
Yeah, so to your point about the contested shots, so the Celts only shoot 27% from three last night, 39% overall. It's pretty brutal for them considering what they've been able to do this playoffs. Nobody ever really got it going for the Celts. Like Kevin said, it was 15 at the end of the first. It was 20 at the end of the first half, 61-41. It's a 30-point win for the Cavs. And for all the people that were freaking out, this was a guaranteed win for the Cavs, I thought, unless everybody else was checked out again. But, you know, these guys are engaged. The one thing I'd say is on the effort-based thing, Korver is the one guy that I feel like brings it every night. Granted, he can have shooting nights that are off, but most of the time you feel good about Korver's effort and being in the right spot and certainly getting off a shot. He's brilliant at that. It's his skill, right? It's his elite skill. And he hits all four of his three-pointers last night. He'll put up some shots. He's 3 of 9. J.R. Smith hit 3 of 4. LeBron, all 3 threes. Clearly they had a good night. 50% from three. They hit 17 on the night. They shoot nearly 49% from the floor and pretty good from the free throw line as well. So it was a blowout. Celts are allowed to have a bad game, and they had one. I think, as Mark Jackson put it towards the end of the game, when Mike Breen was asking him, you know, how do you bounce back from this one? I think Brad Stevens can just say, hey, we took care of business at home. We're up 2-1. There's no reason to freak out about a 30-point loss. Everybody has them. We did it to the Cavs. They did it right back. So I think there you go, off to the races, and you probably feel good if you're a Cavs fan about the Cavs pulling even in this series, but you can't take the Celts lightly in any of these games.
Yeah, I think the big thing for Cleveland, right, is that this was a team effort. Of course, LeBron ended up with the highest plus-minus, 27 points, 12 assists. Like, he was terrific, of course. But the fact that they had 5 other players who were able to hit double digits, and the fact that every single player was a plus for their plus-minus, and sometimes plus-minus can be skewed, but it showed the, I guess, the importance that which every single minute was played. LeBron even playing in the fourth quarter while they were up 30 and Celtic starters were on the bench. I think it just showed that they were kind of putting an emphasis on getting everyone going. Like, I don't think in an ideal world that they never get to use Jordan Clarkson or Larry Nance Jr., who looked really sharp in the minutes that he played. So I think that was one of the things where with the Cavs, they got it done as a team. A lot of it is effort-based as well. I think, too, a big thing was George Hill's aggressiveness. You mentioned, I think it was 10 or 11 points in that first quarter. He only finished with 13, but that's fine. He is starting to, I think, emerge clearly as the X factor, right? Like, you know what you're going to get from LeBron. Kevin Love is playing better to where you feel pretty confident that you're going to get him to play better on most days. It seems like, as George Hill goes, perhaps that's how the Cavs are going to go.
And you're going to need one J.R. Smith game. And then last night wasn't it. Do you know what I mean? You're going to need J.R. to be like, whoa, J.R. hit 7 threes, and that's why they won. That there's going to be one of those games that they'll need to have. I'm not guaranteeing it will happen. I'm just saying they'll need one of those in order to win this series. So I think you're right. I do think, look, is 37 minutes too much in a 30-point game? I could argue a couple of minutes. He probably could have been on the bench, but it's not egregious, in my opinion. And to your point, everybody got involved. Jordan Clarkson gets out there for 9 points. I think good point on Nance. He hits all 4 of his shots for 8 points, but also 6 rebounds, 3 assists. He had 3 steals, so very involved all around. I like Larry Nance's game a lot. He may not ever be a superstar, but I do think he brings the ability, his athleticism, he brings the ability to do a little bit of everything. He's not an outside shooter, but that's okay because he's got size, athleticism, can defend, and he's my kind of player. Not a superstar, but a guy that can be all around pretty good. I'd like to see him do it more consistently, obviously. I think the Cavs would be better off, clearly, if he would do that, but he's the type of player I kind of like to root for. I like to have on my teams, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Larry Nance is going to play a big role moving forward for them. And as well as Tristan Thompson, right? Like, they're similar. They're likely going to be playing the five, and it's a lot of energy stuff. And I will say, I agree that the Celtics, right? Like, you can't lose your minds. Like, kind of being up 2-1 is better than where a lot of people thought that they would be after three games in this series. I think the one number that has to stand out is the 7 points from Al Horford, because he has historically struggled against Tristan Thompson. That is not a lazy narrative. It is a very, very real thing. And game one, he was awesome, but he wasn't matched up with Thompson a lot. Game two, he was still good. This is the Al Horford that gets constantly made fun of during the TNT halftime shows. And he shouldn't be laid into as much as he is by Barkley and Shaq and guys of that nature. But 7.7 boards on 2 of 4 shooting is, I mean, there's no two ways about it. That is not going to get it done. And I think it's one of the things coming out of this game that it certainly has to catch Brad Stevens' eye and say, I need to find a way to make sure that is not how this goes, because Horford's kind of had his way with Kevin Love on both sides of the ball. It's Tristan Thompson and perhaps even a guy like Larry Nance who will give him those troubles.
Yeah, and I think you're right. The 4 shots is the most damning thing about the game last night, right? It means he's not involved at all. And maybe not trying to be. LeBron definitely set the tone defensively last night, right? He has the block on Baines in the first, and then later in the first, Horford, it was such a weird play. He's holding the ball. He's holding the ball over his head, looking to pass it, and LeBron just kind of jumped in his face a couple of times, and as he came down on it, he just ripped the ball out of Horford's hands. It was a very strange play. I was like, Al, what are you doing? He was right in front of you. Can you just protect the ball from the best player in the league? He's going to take it from you. But in any event, that was 2 plays in particular, just in the first quarter alone, that LeBron really tried to set the tone defensively. I think that is really what you can take from all of this. Is there's one thing, LeBron got a little bit of rest. He got everybody involved, made sure everybody was involved with the exception of one player. Do you know the only player that didn't get minutes last night for the Cavs?
I actually almost slipped my mind. I have the box score in front of me, so I see it. But yeah, there was actually quite a bit made of that too.
Yeah, I know, because he didn't come in the blowout during the Raptors series. And I think LeBron isn't going to even address it, and the Cavs aren't even going to really talk about it, but Rodney Hood's going to find his way out of Cleveland after. He's a free agent, too. Mm-hmm. They're clearly not going to bring him back, but it's kind of a bad look going into free agency, refusing to go into games and getting 0 minutes in 30-point blowouts. They could probably just send him home now, but I don't think they want to do anything disruptive as they're on this fight to get into the NBA Finals.
So I think the reporter who asked the question, I think his name is Jason Lloyd, but it was after game 2, and he said, it was very blunt, why do you keep playing Rodney Hood? And Ty Lue kind of flabbergasted. He's like, because I want to. And he's like, well, what has he done to earn minutes? And apparently, like, the report was that Ty Lue was kind of bothered by that question. He didn't really like it. And the result, though, ended up him being not playing a single minute, as you mentioned, even in the garbage time. And I think one reporter, I don't know if it was the same guy, had just asked any reason Ty Lue didn't play tonight and just said no. And they left it at that. It's certainly something that catches your eye in terms of what it means for the Cavs moving forward. Probably not just a further stamp on the fact that those trades that they made at the deadline probably weren't as profitable as some felt. And for what it means for Rodney Hood, he is going to be in for a very, very interesting offseason. I'm sure he thought that he was going to walk into a nice contract, a guy who can, you know, score the ball. I think he averaged 17 while he was in Utah. And now it's just the spot where I don't know what Rodney Hood could be banking on. I don't know who's going to be rushing to not only pay Rodney Hood, but I don't know how Rodney Hood's cracking a starting lineup next year, just kind of what we've seen from him in his run in Cleveland.
And there's going to be a little bit of a financial crunch this offseason, too. A ton of money has been given out the last two offseasons, but there isn't going to be quite as much to go around. Doesn't mean some guys won't get paid, but it's not going to be the sweepstakes that it's been the last two seasons. Some teams have capped themselves out by doing what they've done the last couple of years, so there isn't going to be quite as much available money on the market in total as there has been the last 2 years. So if Rodney Hood's expecting some sort of windfall, he may be sorely mistaken, as you said. So we can talk a little bit more about the Celts after the break. You mentioned Al Horford. You know, Marcus Morris is there. Look, there isn't like one, I guess from a rebounding standpoint, they need him to be a lot better, but there isn't one thing that Marcus Morris does that's hugely, is an elite skill anyway. He's there as a defender. He's there as a little bit of an energy guy in order to get rebounds. He didn't really do much of anything last night, but the battle between him and Tristan Thompson and him and LeBron rages on.
I think the thing about Morris is there's not, this is, I don't know if this sounds like a compliment, but there's nothing he's necessarily trash at. Like he can shoot the basketball. Right. He's not an elite, but he can do it. I don't want to say he's average at everything because that might be an overstatement, but there's not necessarily any part of his game that he's trash at. And there are some things that he's really good at. Like he is a good on-ball defender. He can knock down the occasional three. He can put the ball on the deck in certain spots. So he brings a plus. Obviously, you would need him to be better. He ended up having the worst plus minus of anybody on the Celtics. I think Jaylen Brown's struggles probably jumped out more than any. The five personal fouls as well in the game where it's just he never really got into any sort of rhythm, only put up 8 shots and scored 10 points.
Yeah, it's just one of those games, right? You almost bury the film kind of game. We didn't get it done. Nobody got it done. It's nobody's fault, and it's everybody's fault kind of thing. So we're going to come back. We'll continue to talk about hoops after the break. It's Mike Blewett, Kevin Walsh, with producer JP behind the glass today on Fantasy Sports Today. Join us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network right after this.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
That's a good Sunday morning jam right here. I know this is made, that's probably made before I was born, made decades before Kevin was alive, but it's a good jam. It's a good rocking classic rock jam. What are the feeling? Boston. You've heard about, well, first things first, if you want to contact us, please do so on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at The Kevin Walsh. And if you want to give us a call, give us a shout. We're all taking calls all morning. 844-843-6879. You want to talk about your fantasy football team, your fantasy baseball team, any other sports of any kind, feel free to let us know. So that's 84FNTSY, as I mentioned earlier. Tune in radio, iHeart Radio, Fantasy Sports Radio app. Appreciate you listening to that, or if you're streaming online. Which Nando DeFino says you're a weirdo if you do that, but I don't think so. I think it's just a different way to do it. One thing before we get back to hoops, if you've heard about the DailyRoto.com dollar month here on the network, but I wanted to put it in context for you. Let's say you buy a lottery ticket, and you pay your dollar to pick a bunch of numbers. That's it. And you then clutch the ticket and hope. Well, now let's say that you try DailyRoto.com dollar month. You pay your dollar, get access for 30 days, and you're transported into a world that has produced five millionaires. One, two, three, four, five millionaires. Take destiny into your own hands. Go to dailyroto.com and enter the code $1. That's O-N-E dollar. That's dailyroto.com and enter the code $1. So there you go. So as we continue to talk about hoops, I think we'll talk a little bit about the draft, Kev. I know you had some questions about Luka Doncic and all that kind of stuff, so we'll get to that in a moment. But a little bit more about this game. Look, the funny part is there isn't that much to talk about. When a team when you get blown out like that, it's obvious that the Cavs had a lot more juice last night, and the Celtics just didn't play well. And it was kind of over at halftime. We've obviously seen them come back. Was it the Milwaukee series or the Sixers series? They wiped out the 22-point deficit or whatever it was. So when I saw had a little bit going on, so I couldn't key in really on the first half as much. I went back and watched it later. But when I saw at halftime it was 61-41, I was like, well, that's kind of a rough spot. But at the same time, I keep thinking back to the Philly series when really the pivotal game in that series, they came back down from 22 and they won the game by like 12. It was a ridiculous comeback. So the good news is for the Celts is that they're never really out of it. But I didn't – while I saw the score and was like, this is going to be a tough one, I tuned in and watched for a little bit because I thought, you know, we'll see. Maybe they come out. And the Cavs are so bad in the third quarter, this whole season, I thought it was worth watching.
I think the thing that has made this series really difficult on a lot of analysts are these have probably been the two most difficult teams to pin down for a large part in this Eastern Conference. Like when the Celtics had those big injuries, everybody was ready to write them off for incredibly good reasons, right? But then they get into the postseason and it's like, listen, they don't have as much talent as Milwaukee, but they beat them in seven, and you're like, okay, I mean, that makes sense. But Philly looks great. And then they beat Philly in five, and you're like, no, yeah, that kind of makes sense because Philly's also incredibly young and the Celtics have this incredible defense and Brad Stevens was kind of exposing Ben Simmons in a lot of ways. So yeah, I see that. And then they're up 2-0 on the Cavs and it's like, well yeah, they're just more talented. And then you have the Cavs on the other side of the basketball where it's like every time anything goes wrong, like, well, don't worry, they have LeBron, they figure this whole thing out. Then they go to seven with the Pacers and it looks horrible. But then they sweep the one seed Raptors and you're like, oh, they're back. Then they're down 2-0 and you're like, geez. And now they blow the Celtics out by 30 and you're like, yeah, I get it. So it's been incredibly difficult, I think, to gauge these two teams accurately at a lot of points. This game is, I think, obviously, since I thought the Cavs were going to win in four, right? This is kind of what I was anticipating, where the Cavs were not going to really mess around. And I just thought that the Celtics at points would find themselves struggling to find consistent offense. And in that first quarter, they were settling for a lot of difficult mid-range jumpers. And again, I just think the one thing that does jump out to me, and the Celtics had laps, and they are not going to do that. Brad Stevens, I don't think a Brad Stevens team is going to have out and play that poorly effort-wise two games in a row. But I think for Cleveland, it has to be encouraging for them and discouraging for anybody rooting for Boston is a lot of the success I think that comes out of this performance from the Cavs was effort-based. Like, I think you could probably still make the case that either one of these teams is more talented than the other, all things considered. And it just seemed like the Cavs played their best effort game thus far, and it resulted in a 30-point blowout.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to be able to talk about this game for an hour, but I think you're right. And how much analysis can you do when it comes to an effort game where maybe Boston was, you know, sometimes you just get steamrolled right out of the gate. And that's effectively what happened. Like, Jesus, George Hill has 10 points in the first quarter and Horford can't get out of it. It wasn't even a trap. It was a straight up deep. He can't pass the ball and Aaron Baines is going to the hoop and LeBron just ripped it out of his hands. Just, you know, LeBron absolutely set the tone. That's clearly the way that things run in Cleveland from the top of the organization down. I put him at the very top of the organization. That's just how things are going to run. So you give them a good shot on Monday and we'll see how Boston bounces back. But I think Brad Stevens is the kind of coach that will make sure that
these guys are not freaked out over one game. They still have the two-game lead, and honestly, even if they lost on Monday, which isn't something he would enter into discussion before Game 4, but even if they lost on Monday, they're going home, even up, in a place where they barely lose.
Yeah, that is one of the things, right? Like so far this postseason, they've handled business. They've yet to lose in Boston, and they've been in the higher seed in all of the games they've played to this point. So that has to make you feel good about it. One of the things that jumped out, and I wanted to look back just through the play-by-play, was how this game went early on. And it was 9-4 at the 9:03 mark. LeBron had made a layup. And then no one scored for about the next 3 minutes or so. And then the Cavs had to take a full timeout. And it was one of those things where, I mean, it's a five-point game, but it was so clear that what the Cavs were doing defensively was, it seemed like it was going to be very effective. But again, it wasn't as if they found this massive scheme breakthrough or all of a sudden they were exploiting this major weakness that nobody knew was there. I cannot stress it enough how it just felt so effort-based. And it's one of those frustrating things, because I can't even guarantee you that in Game 3 the Cavs come out with the same level of effort, because it's just who they've been.
I get it. And so the spread on Monday, Cleveland will be laying 6.5, same as they were before the game yesterday. So I'd be more inclined to pick the Cavs if the spread were tighter. This is the type of game where I think the Cavs can win in a close game. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. There hasn't been a close game yet in this series, but I think the Cavs could win that one. In a closer contest. So I don't really want to bet against LeBron, but I almost like the points in that one more than I did yesterday.
I could definitely see the game being close. I'd anticipate, though, that the Cavs can hold this down. I really believe that Boston shouldn't be able to get to 100 points on most nights, especially not the games in Cleveland, because their main offense is either Al Horford, who, again, he can be taken out of the game, and he's not a prolific scorer. Jason Tatum, for as impressive as he is still a rookie. And then Jaylen Brown, and you saw it, when he was matched up on LeBron a lot in Game 1 and Game 2, there was a lack of effort. LeBron was casually switching and passing him off, and it gave Jaylen Brown a mismatch. That was not the case in Game 3. And for all of the talk about LeBron and the lack of effort that he puts forth on defense in Year 15 is fair, but there is no debating the second that he turns it on, and he's still one of the best defenders on any given possession that the league has to offer. I believe he was 2-for-10, or players were 2-for-10 shooting against LeBron as the primary defender.
One thing I'll say about Tatum being a rookie, you're right, technically, but I would give him credit that Jason Tatum started 80 games in the regular season this year, and he's now played in, and now he's started 15, how many games is it now? Seven? Plus
15.
Five. They beat the Sixers in 5, 12. Yeah, 15. So 15 games here. I mean, 95 games in, you know, what do they always say? They use it more in college than they do in professional sports. But when the guy plays, you know, when the guy starts like 30 games, say, well, he's not really a freshman anymore. He started 30 games. He's not really a rookie anymore. He's played 95 games in the pros at a high level. And they're winning playoff series. So considering the level of talent, the level of player he is, you know, he's got as much experience as some guys that are five-year veterans, if that makes
sense. Yeah, sure. I know. I mean, comparatively throughout the league, I agree. I just think in the vacuum that is this series, I think there can be certain moments, right, where we can acknowledge this is a different level than anything that Jason Tatum has experienced before.
Oh, yeah. Look, there's going to be a moment when he's on the court with LeBron, whether it was last night or it is about to happen, where he's like, whoa. I think anybody would be say, like, whoa, I didn't realize it could get to another level. Look, I think the Warriors experienced that a couple of years ago, where they didn't realize a player could take it to another level like that. So very few people can, frankly, ever. So that's just the level that LeBron is on, and I know Kev's a super fan as well. But anyway, that's that. We talked a little bit about Rockets, Warriors yesterday. So that game is going to tip off tonight. The spread has moved slightly in favor of the Warriors. So the money coming in on the Warriors. So it's moved up to 7.5. So not much, but the money is shading towards the Warriors, even with that, even now laying 7.5. I think people feel like they're going to get home. They can brush off the blowout from game two, and they're going to unleash hell on the Rockets tonight at 8 o'clock.
I think, because I said to you yesterday, I do think that the Rockets are going to split. If I were to be gambling, I would just take the Rockets straight up without even the points tonight. And if that hit, then I wouldn't even worry about game four. And if that didn't hit, I'd do it again on game four. That it's going to be played, what is that, Tuesday?
So you want to play the money line here. Mm-hmm. So plus 300 on the Rockets. You'd rather play it that way. You would even do that tonight? You feel...
Yeah, because I anticipate it's going to hit one of the two nights. So I'd run it tonight. If it hits, okay. Don't do it game four, because they're like not going to take two.
I like that as a strategy. I don't agree with you, but I like that as a strategy, considering how you feel. I think I said yesterday, I think the Warriors go up 3-1 here. Rockets go back and take game five, and then the Warriors close it out here back in Golden State in game six. So I do like that as a betting strategy, though. If you feel like the Rockets are going to take one of these two, yeah, you can bet the spread both nights, but the bigger payoff would be to play the money line. It's plus 300 right now. From what I'm seeing, Golden State minus 360. So, you know, you can do the math. You put $100 down both of those nights, you're going to hit, come out ahead, and feel pretty good about it. I like that play completely. By the way, you know, we're always going to infuse here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're always going to infuse some spread talk. It's something we always have. But in light of – always have done. But in light of what happened this week with the overturning of PASPA, which is the – which is basically leading to many states, including close to us, New Jersey, instituting sports gambling. And some New Jersey casinos are doing it as early as next weekend, Memorial Day. So we'll get into it in more detail in a later segment, but I just want to let you know, in case you're like, hey, these guys are talking gambling, talking spreads, I'll never sit here and sell you my picks. I'm not a tout. I'm not a guy that's going to shout from the rooftops, but I know a little bit about it, and I think some of you out there are doing it, whether you've done it previously on the sly or in the future, if you're going to go down to a casino and do it legit. You know, we'd like to hear from you. I like to hear from people. You can hit me up on Twitter at Mike Blewett or at FNTSY Radio, or you can give us a call. I'd love to hear if you're going to go to a casino, whether you're in Jersey or West Virginia, or if you live in Nevada, or you go to Nevada, or you're planning on making a pilgrimage to Atlantic City. It's interesting. There's 11 states that are going to institute bills on this in the short term. Clearly, the state where we live, I think, Kev, is going to be one of them, right? We have casinos upstate, and it's something we have. Yonkers Raceway, which is just outside the city, which is a place where that can happen. So we'll get into this deeper in a further segment, but I just want to let people know, like, we're always going to throw these numbers around because it's going to be increasingly important to sports fans.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I heard as people were reacting to this, and a point that I really liked, is this is impactful for media in the sense that you don't have to kind of hide from it necessarily. And I think that here on the network, it was relatively open, right? Because we can all admit sports betting was a thing before sports betting was legal. But now, perhaps instead of just getting into spreads, we could lay out a parlay, perhaps, that we like. I know, especially when we get into the football seasons, college and the NFL, people love to play those parlays. And so I think that it'll be fun to kind of get into that and mix and match certain things and, kind of just take it up a notch, because I do find that stuff fascinating. And totally agree on giving us a call, because I adore hearing what people bet. I've always enjoyed watching people watch something that they have bet on. There's usually at the family parties, a cousin of mine, her boyfriend, would, you know, sometimes just lay certain things down, and it always seemed to be the most obscure bets. And it was just a real joy to watch him care so much about the over under of the first half of the Sunday primetime game. It's always a treat. So I'm glad that it is legalized and to get into it.
So at the top, So at the top of the hour, we'll do a full segment on it. Just get people's thoughts, get your thoughts on whether or not you would go to casinos and all that kind of stuff. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit about, and it may be premature, but since the lottery happened earlier this week, we'll talk a little bit about the draft. Awesome that the Knicks didn't win the lottery again. So I don't really know why I root for the Knicks anymore. I don't. I have friends that work for the Sixers. I feel like I was about to jump the bandwagon there.
Ooh.
I absolutely 100% would have rescinded my Knicks fandom had Phil Jackson pulled off a Porzingis trade before he walked out the door. But that was the last shred. I was hanging by a thread, and they kept Zinger around. And now, obviously, we probably not see that guy play until October 2019, right?
That's
like, why would you play him next year? The tank should be on. So we'll talk about the draft and who they may get and who some of the other players that are arriving in the top 10 or the lottery will be. I know Kevin has some questions about the European influence or the international influence on the draft, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're talking hoops, talking gambling, NFL, MLB. In subsequent hours. So it's Mike and Kevin. We'll be back right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FST, took a bite of food, coming out of the break, super smart, really professional radio behavior right there. Anyway, we're here until noon, and after us is Fantasy Football Frenzy. It's with Corey Parson and George Kurtz, and that'll be 12 to 2, and then from 2 to 4 is Tout Wars baseball. So that is with Laura Michaels, Justin Mason, and Todd Zola, I believe. So JP, producer, will correct me on that if I'm wrong, but that's it. So we're here at 12, then 12 to 2, 2 to 4, and you get some replays of Craig Carton and this show after that. So lottery. Knicks didn't win, Kev, like I said before the break. That's really all I cared about. Phoenix is the one pick. Kings are the second pick. Hawks are the third pick. Who was the one team that got? Who had the best chance of getting? I can't remember who had the best chance of being into that top three without getting in. I guess it was it Memphis, maybe.
Yeah, Memphis. Memphis got bounced from 2 to 4, and the Mavericks got bounced from 3 to 5.
There you go. So. And right now, I'm just on ESPN looking at Jonathan Givony, who's been really good with the lottery and a lot of the prospect rankings. But right now, they have DeAndre Ayton going to the Phoenix Suns, Luka Doncic. Doncic? Is that Doncic, right? That's usually how you would say that. Luka Doncic from Real Madrid going to the Kings. I mean, what a brutal situation that would be for him. Atlanta Hawks with Marvin Bagley III. I mean, honestly, can you imagine that? Hey, I'm an international basketball player. Sweet. You're going to Sacramento. I mean, that would be awful. Atlanta Hawks, Marvin Bagley III, Jaren Jackson Jr., of the going to the Memphis Grizzlies and Dallas Mavericks. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. in the game that they got bounced from the NCAA tournament, I think he took like, I think he played like not even 10 minutes. He took like four shots or something like that. It was really an absurdity. I was like, maybe that wasn't Izzo's best day. Mo Bamba to the Mavericks at 5. Trae Young to the Magic at 6. He had some quotes yesterday saying he's the best player in the draft, not just the best scorer, the best shooter, but the best player. Wendell Carter from Duke, he goes to the Bulls at 7. Cavs, Michael Porter Jr. from Missouri, he obviously barely played the entire season due to an injury. So Michael Porter Jr. going to the Cavs. That pick is via the Nets. That would be kind of an interesting addition, right? The Cavs are the top 10 pick. And then the Knicks, Colin Sexton from Alabama. And the Sixers would get the hometown guy, Mikal Bridges from Villanova. So that would be your top 10. Clearly, we're going to see some things move around, probably see some trades involved before this is all over. But what is your thoughts on the landscape, the quality? I know you had some questions about the international flavor as well.
Well, yeah, in terms of Doncic, I actually think that he is going to be on the Phoenix Suns unless they trade that pick. The relationship that exists already between Igor Kokoskov, the coach who they just hired, was the men's national team for Slovenia in Eurobasket this summer where they won gold, and he already coached Doncic. I just don't think that you can pass up on the opportunity to provide a prospect of Doncic's caliber with that familiarity, right? Like, I feel like that is something that is almost too good to pass up on, and I would anticipate that Kokoskov would be in the room pushing for that to be the pick. There are ties between Ayton and the Suns. Obviously, he went to Arizona. There are people within the front office who are tied to the University of Arizona, so there are connections there, but I don't think that those would be as strong as the Doncic and Kokoskov relationship. The thing that I wanted to ask you, because Luka right now is pretty much undeniably viewed as the most hyped prospect to come from overseas in the history of the draft. He actually just was named MVP of the EuroLeague, which is recognized as the second best basketball league in the world. He won it at the age of 19. I think the next closest person to win it at age, he was obviously the youngest, was Milos Teodosic, who just came over to the Clippers. He won it when he was 23. So he's doing unprecedented things. And I kind of just wanted to ask you from your perspective, because obviously you have been following the NBA draft much longer than I have. And you've probably seen the development of the idea of guys coming overseas and just how people feel about that from, you know, when it first started to become a thing to now, and how that whole thing has developed.
There's a couple different ways to go on this. First of all, it's important to note that he's a 6'8", 228-pound point guard who just turned 19 basically a month ago. So a few things here. First of all, the hype machine is always something that you have to deal with, right? I'm not suggesting that they're wrong, but there is a massive transition coming from, as good as the league as that is, coming from there to here, whether it's the intensity at the defensive level or whatever it might be. The good news is a lot of European players have a lot of traditional skill, right? They pass the ball well. They take the right shot in many instances. They are certainly far more coachable in that arena, right? Finesse offensively skilled players. Sometimes they aren't tough enough. Sometimes they don't play great defense, but the hype machine is part of it. It doesn't matter that he's the most hyped guy ever. It just matters if he can live up to some level of expectation. You know, Dirk Nowitzki went 10th in the draft and he's the greatest European player ever, right?
Yeah.
I guess that's fair to say. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head if there's anybody else in that range, no. But probably not. He's the greatest international player ever. So
I guess Hakeem would
there be the are times argument. Say that again.
Hakeem, I think, would probably be the only argument. I think that was just off.
Yeah,
the
it's also yeah, I think that's totally fair. Yeah. Hakeem, I would probably put him in front of Dirk, but then we're comparing big men, and Dirk is hard to
very
say
different.
He's a big man, right?
He's very different.
He's a power forward, you know, he's a power forward and versus center. Anyway, what is interesting to me first about this draft is that there have been other years where it has been dominated by international players. Not as much this year, right? Just in this top 10 alone, there's only one player that's outside of college, and it's Doncic, the player we're talking about. As I keep going through the draft, too, as we even get outside of the lottery, there's more guys. This is all college guys, right? So there have been years. We get to 20 with Zanon Musa, who would potentially go to the Timberwolves here. So that is kind of an interesting situation where we have maybe less international players than we've seen in other years. So that's one. Two is, well, one was that the hype machine is what it is. It just matters if he finds himself in a good scenario. But two is that there's actually less of an international influence in this first round than there's been in other years.
Yeah, the freshmen this year were truly fantastic, and there's a lot to be excited about. And you see that just within that top 10 that you had laid out there. I actually feel, and this is going to sound overzealous, so just allow me to go with this. I think there are six guys in this draft that have top 10 player in the NBA potential. Now, there is a 0% chance that all six would hit that. Odds are, three at most would make an all-star team. But I think that there could be...
Who are those guys?
I think there would be a case to be made for Ayton, Doncic, Bagley, Bamba, Trae Young, and Michael Porter Jr.
I don't like Trae Young in the NBA as much as other people do.
I am going to end up being the high man on Trae Young probably everywhere. Yeah, the thing is though, we've seen small guys have success, and his skill set is... one that can allow him to thrive despite that size.
Agreed. And people make the Steph Curry comparisons clearly because Steph Curry is a slight player, and it took him a couple of years to get to the level where he needed to be. But Steph Curry, keep in mind, was also an experienced player. His father played in the NBA, not to mention that Steph Curry spent some time at Davidson, 3 years at Davidson, and having a lot of success there. So he was a more polished player than Trae Young would be. We saw how Oklahoma struggled down the stretch, both him and the team. I'm not dismissing him. I'm just saying I'm not going to be as high on him as some others might be. Deadly shooter, get that, ability to score. I just wonder, at point guard at 6'2", 176, in what is a golden age of point guards, how he distances himself from some of the other point guards that are super talented in the league right now.
I thought ultimately it comes down to that ability to shoot the three off the dribble. And he's also a phenomenal passer, right? Like, it was, I think it was...
Yeah, that is the thing that it should be noted, that I probably should have highlighted. He is an excellent passer.
I think that's the thing that separates him from a lot of these guys that have had, you know, there's a lot of talk, right, about like Jimmer Fredette. Like, Jimmer Fredette could shoot from all over the place, but Jimmer Fredette could never do what Trae Young did and average almost, I think it was 8 assists per game on that Oklahoma team. And not to knock those guys, but there wasn't another NBA talent on the floor with Trae Young at Oklahoma. And that's why as the year progressed, as teams not only got more familiar, but realized that they could just play tighter on him. And I think that's why a lot of that happened. The one thing that I'll find interesting, and it's not that I'm trying to pick apart what you said, because everybody's saying what you said, but it only seems to apply to Trae Young, but he's about the same size as Colin Sexton. And I don't typically hear
I'm not 100% sold on Sexton.
Sure, right.
If the Knicks end up with Colin Sexton, I'm going to have some concerns because, by the way, we can't seem to find a point guard. It doesn't matter how many we get. We can't find one.
I think for the Knicks, I 100% think that Mikal Bridges would be the perfect pick for this team because of the fact that it already feels as if Chris Stapps is going to miss significant time next year, right? Like, the best case scenario is he puts forth 30 games. That this team should should head for a top five pick no matter what, right? Like, the lottery could be tricky, but they should finish as one of the five worst teams in the NBA, and that should guarantee them a top five pick. see if next year perhaps you can maybe grab that elite guard, because Bridges is that type of pick. It kind of reminds me of Klay Thompson, where you take him and he's incredibly valuable and he's never going to necessarily be a transcendent superstar. But when you have that type of player who can then play off of your other superstar or superstars, it is invaluable. It is irreplaceable, because Bridges has that ability to guard 1 through 3, 1 through 4 in small ball lineups, and that 3-point shot is very, very real.
So one thing I would say about going back to your guys that you think have the potential to be top 10 players, two of those guys that you mentioned were big men, and in the change in the way that the NBA has changed, Do you feel like those guys have the skill set? Ayton now can be an elite defensive player, which is unique. Do you feel like those guys can be part of this NBA and still be legitimate big men? Because Embiid is really the new one, right? It's Giannis and Embiid and the types of guys that, yeah, you can put them in the five, but they're not going to be a traditional five because they can shoot threes and they can run the floor and handle the ball a little bit and then be an excellent defender. So does Mo Bamba really have that kind of offensive skill and range, and or does Ayton? Ayton would be more traditional because he's such a good defender down low that he would just keep people out of the paint. It may not matter against the Rockets and the Warriors, but doesn't mean that he's not still an elite prospect.
I actually think that, and again, right, so that is an incredibly high bar to place on six guys. And again, at no point could six make it. It's just, in a perfect world, perhaps. I actually think Ayton perhaps would struggle more to hit that top 10 mark than a guy like Mo Bamba, because while Ayton is incredibly impressive what he can do offensively, and he has the size to be good defensively, it sometimes doesn't seem to be there. There's a lot of talk about effort-wise with him, and sometimes it's just positioning. And I think the gap between what he gives as a rim protector and Bamba, I do find significant. The thing that has been said about Bamba pretty much since he broke onto the scene is Rudy Gobert with the ability to knock down threes. Some people, now I wouldn't make this case, but some people make the case that Gobert is a top 10 player in the NBA. That feels like a stretch, right? But that's without any type of ability to shoot the basketball, period. I'd say Gobert's comfortably a top 20 guy, though, in this league. So if you add the ability all of a sudden to shoot the three, that becomes incredibly impressive. Bamba registered a 7'10" wingspan at the combine. That is ridiculous. The videos that have come out, a number of them, I know you can see them on the Draft Express Twitters, or it's not Draft Express anymore. It's, as you mentioned, Jonathan Givani and Mike Schmidt. They put them out that Bamba's 3-point shot looks a lot better already since he left Texas, that he's kind of fixed his shooting motion. I actually think that Bamba's one of these guys where I really think that throughout workouts, he might find himself moving into that top three.
Interesting. So going back to your, so I appreciate that. And going back to the Colin Sexton thing and the Bridges thing, I'm with you. I like Bridges in this NBA more than just let's look for another point guard.
I agree.
Because if you can sit here and tell me that you know for certain that Colin Sexton's going to be a better player than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I'm not on board with that. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I've seen them both play enough that I don't think there's much separating them. And down the road, Gilgeous-Alexander, I think there's much of a chance to him for him to be better than Sexton as the other way around, especially at 6'6". Doesn't matter how slight he is with that kind of height. He can put on some weight. And 6'6", 171, I'd probably take that all day over 6'2", 183. So that's why I think Bridges has a more unique and greater upside skill set than do any one of the point guards. I understand the elite shooting talent of Trae Young, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with him. I'm just saying I'm not as sold on him in the NBA as some other people are, including yourself. So a little bit about that, a little fun with the draft there. We're going to come back in the next hour. We'll talk some football, maybe some baseball, but I do want to get to talking about our ability to place wagers on any number of sports moving forward in the state of New Jersey and other places down the road with the overturning of PASPA by the Supreme Court. So we'll talk about that.
You can bet on who's going to be the number one pick.
Yeah, there you go. Let's do it all. All kinds of prop bets. We'll be talking about them here each and every week. So it's Mike and Kevin. We'll come back after the break, do a little bit of that. Take your calls. If you want to give us a call, 844-843-6879. Mike and Kevin on FST, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Come back right after the break.